Let's see what happens when we dare to color outside the lines. You're listening to Color Mixology, the debut podcast from Sherwin-Williams.
Hello, and welcome to Color Mixology by Sherwin-Williams. I'm your host, Sue Wadden. In our last episode, we had TK Wismer from Cafe Appliances on the show to talk about the trends we're seeing out in the world and on the horizon with our 2026 Color Mix Forecast Anthology Volume 2. Check it out if you missed it and visit swcolorforecast.com to explore the forecast for yourself. Today, we're welcoming Jason Phillips to Color Mixology. He's the CEO at Phillips Collection, a family-owned furniture company that is located in the home furnishing capital of the world, High Point, North Carolina. Phillips is known for its stunning global influences and commitment to sustainable sourcing. We're really excited for this conversation, so thank you so much, Jason, for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, this has been something I've wanted to talk about for a long time. The furniture business is fascinating to me. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and your career so far and what the Phillips Collection is all about?
Absolutely. I'll keep this part short, but it is an interesting story. So we're a family business, as you mentioned. I'm technically third generation, and I just took over as CEO. My grandparents helped launch the business with my parents. That's a whole other story. But mom and dad, Mark and Julie Phillips, really founded Phillips Collection with a love of discovery and design and traveling the world. And I grew up traveling to Asia and Mexico and Europe with them, coming to High Point. We're from New York originally, so coming to High Point, North Carolina twice a year as a kid, not really knowing what was going on, but knowing that we had a showroom, knowing that there was all this buzz. Fast forward a few years, I studied industrial design at university and met my wife, then girlfriend at the time, at University of Michigan. And we moved down to North Carolina in 2001. You know, took a risk to joining the family business, risk slash reward. It's sort of I always knew it was an unavoidable reality, but such a gift to join a dynamic company where travel and design and blazing our own path was always so important to us. So I've been 20 years involved full time with the company, just took over, but dad has stepped into a chairman role and he and I are planning our next trip to the Philippines as we speak. So he's still very much involved. And I've been very fortunate to be a student of both my parents, but my father particularly as this visionary in the industry, and just feel really grateful and fortunate to have him as my mentor.
Well, the furniture business, and I'm sure not a lot of people outside of the industry understand how unique it is. So it has been a great pleasure of mine over the last 10 years kind of learning about what makes manufacturing furniture so, so unique. And, you know, there's a lot of competition out there. And so I think it's really what you guys have done as a corporation to be unique in the industry is really notable. So your company is known for eco-conscious design, which of course is like table stakes now. Everybody in design is focused on sustainability. So talk a little bit about your focus on sustainability in this industry and how is that evolving?
I love that it's table stakes. I mean, so well said. We all have to be aware that the consumer is paying attention and making his and her decision on who they shop with based on not just the product and the price and the warranty, but the story behind the brand. So transparency has always been important to us, but it's now required of every company. We work with nature as our palette of inspiration, both, you know, in the materials and the motifs. So it's been timeless to be able to work with nature. But there's also an importance to how we source our woods, what kinds of finishes we put on it, the story that we tell. Our tagline is every piece of conversation. So there has to be an interesting story about why we came up with something, why the material, why the craftsman community we worked with has a unique story, and we try to communicate that. So because the stakes are now higher and the transparency is required, we try to go one step further. And I think this question might come up later even, but circularity, really closing that loop. So we can source something in a sustainable way. We should build it in a way that lasts because there's sustainability in something that can be a multi-generational piece that you don't have to replace, that doesn't fall apart on you. But what happens at the end of that life cycle, if or when somebody needs to get rid of something? Is it able to biodegrade? Is it able to go into a landfill? Or are there ways that we can recollect it and repurpose it? So we're always thinking about what that next step is, which is closing that loop.
Do you have like a vision for that? Is that something that you promote and talk about? Like that idea of circularity? That's really very important.
Yes.
So how can people find out more information on your commitment to circularity?
Yeah, that is coming. Okay. We should certainly create, because we already have things in motion. So you're even inspiring me now to create a microsite and a landing page for this. The last loop is bringing product back to us when necessary. I'm trying to remember which major retailer does this really well. I want to say it's West Elm, perhaps, but I could be wrong. Where they have a program where they will pick up your piece even after 10 years and repurpose it. That would be amazing. We have some very heavy product. We have pieces of wood that weigh 700 pounds as dining tables. It's quite hard to pick up. But most importantly, creating something timeless that's well made, I think, is one of the most significant steps a company can take in sustainability. So there's many levels to sustainability. There are companies that might work with plastics, which are not inherently sustainable, even if you're talking about recycled plastics. But if you can make it last, if you can improve your packaging, be sustainable there, if you can, in your facilities, use LED lighting. We even now have two new projects going on, one just finished, which is motion-activated lighting throughout our facilities. So we already went through a decade ago a major effort to redo all of our lighting to be LED, which is low energy. And now the next step was to have the lights only turn on when it detects motion. So they're actually only on 30% of the time. The other project is a major solar farm that we're just now finishing on our property. So we're right off the highway, Business 85 here in High Point, and people will see a giant solar array. So we're not only going to be carbon neutral, we're going to be net positive and actually be able to sell energy back to the grid.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, one of these days when I'm down there, I'd love to come and see you and take a tour. I don't know. Do you do that ever?
Always. We would love to. And for any listeners out there that are interested, that find themselves in the area, just pop in. A heads up is sometimes helpful, but we love when people walk in. Sometimes the public walks in and we're to the trade company.
Right.
We say, am I and can I get a tour? And we say, well, you might need to work with a designer if you want to buy something, but we're happy to give you a tour. And we have 5 warehouses here in High Point, about 400,000 square feet of storage of incredible one-of-a-kinds. We have one warehouse that's nearly 200,000 feet that's just filled with incredible wood treasures. All responsibly reclaimed. I mean, each piece bigger than the next, 30-foot long live edge tables and sculptures made out of discarded roots. It's incredible.
So, OK, let's go back to the legacy. So third generation, how did Phillips Corporation start? Like, what did the furniture look like? Can you describe kind of where it started and where you are now?
Yes, we were a company of discovery. So, and we've become a company of design, so I can walk you through that. Discovery was more going around the world, finding teak wood chests, carved panels, Ming style coffee tables. And some of our first customers were Crate and Barrel. We would sell Macy's in Bloomingdale's and ABC Carpet and Home in New York City. But these were collected treasures, just sourcing incredible objects that mom and dad would find around the world that wasn't yet exposed to the American market. And they had this era of just exposing the world to incredible designs that had existed sometimes for centuries overseas to the American consumer. And they rode that wave for a while. And then in the year 2000, we met a Mexican artist named Yuri Zatarain, who we had 10 incredible years with. And he transformed us from a company of discovery to a company of design. He did at the time large-scale ceramics out of Mexico, very primitive motifs, but presented them in a very gallery-like feel. So we went from being a company that could be described as more traditional, transitional, into uber contemporary, sort of overnight. It was a major shift. It attracted an entire new clientele, people that wanted something and appreciated something different and unique and something that really stopped you in your tracks. I mean, my dad, I feel like people often accuse us of sounding like the same person. It's pretty much me just sounding like him. But he said a Phillips piece around this time should, you know, you can buy a lamp and every day you come home and you turn your light on and it functions, or you can buy a lamp from Phillips collection and every day you just go, oh, you know, that's, it's the stop you in your tracks idea. which is always, you know, we like to be very honest about where we are in the marketplace. We've been stigmatized in a good way of, I need that one Phillips piece to finish my project. And we want to capture more than just one piece. So our constant opportunity, let's call it, is how do we capture more of the home? And that's sort of what we're working on now. How do we become maybe not whole home? Because that's a big change to start doing upholstery and major lighting collections, but to do more of the home. So what's a bookcase from Phillips look like? What's a floor lamp? What's a chandelier? We've never had a chandelier.
Oh,
we have customers that are ready for that. So we're actively designing into what's next from us.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the collections, but talk about the travel. So everybody always asks, where do you get your inspiration? They ask me that for color. So I would ask you the same question. What do you see when you're out there that really is moving you now?
Yeah, we love scale and we love nature. And we have been studying a pioneering research called science and design, which is really starting to tie how the brain connects to certain designs, how design can improve your life through the types of finishes you're using. Obviously, low VOC finishes that you put on product improve your health. But scientists at Johns Hopkins have learned that wood grain in a room lowers your resting heart rate by 2 beats per minute. I mean, that's powerful. And we're selling wood products, so we can start. It's never about exploiting this. It's about geeking out on the research. So what inspires us? Of course, like anybody says, and I subscribe to this, you know, traveling, seeing the world, seeing architecture, seeing fashion, seeing what comes up on the color mix forecast that we love relying on. We rely so much. Yeah, that there's a plug. But it's true. We rely so much on what's happening around the world. And then understanding our own DNA is very important. I think some companies sometimes get a little lost, maybe get pigeonholed into a certain look. We've always been known for bringing exciting products to market, which really gives us a wide lens, but then we're very narrow on materials. So wood, metal, glass, stone are sort of the materials we work with. And we love working with rough, uncut, unapologetic hunks of nature. So what inspires me is a rock in a field that has a beautiful texture to it that I know we can purchase, ship to the Philippines, create a mold of it, and dress in fashion colors. I mean, it's something other companies just don't have the wherewithal to do or the desire to do, and it's our niche in the market. So we're always thinking, okay, we're looking at something that's a coffee table. How would that look as a mirror on the wall if we cut a hole into it? And it's just a different way of thinking.
I have to believe that your industrial design background helps with that as well, right? Like designers often solve problems all the time. That's what we do, right? So you take a problem and you put a different spin on it and it comes out something else, which is great.
Yeah, I loved my degree. Industrial design really teaches you how to work on a project. You have a task, a problem to solve, and you work your way through it, not only through ideation and prototyping, but through being able to communicate your ideas visually to the stakeholders, to be able to execute something and using research. It's design plus research plus a bit of engineering. I'm not going to glorify it. I think fine art, if I studied fine art, that would have been equally beneficial. I am not my father, as close as I am to my father. He is not a designer. He's a curator. He's got this incredible curator's eye and a vision for what could be. That's not something you can learn in a classroom. That's something that I'm still, now that I'm taking the reins of the company, realizing it's going to be 5-10 years before my own brand voice and influence arrives. But it's an exciting moment. And all the while, I want to make sure the company is, you know, it's what we've built is carried on.
Absolutely. Oh, it's just it's an amazing story. So on this inspiration front, and then I'll close that loop. Yeah. What's like one of the most favorite things that you found out there and where in the world? I've seen some video guys that you guys have produced that are pretty cool. So,
yeah, I mean, I can go in many different directions. We love what happens to a piece of wood when you play around with unique processes. So we can electrocute wood and it creates these fractal patterns, almost like lightning on the wood. It's an incredible technique. And we call that our lightning collection.
Wow.
So that's pretty wild. We also use the sun. We put mineral spirits on the wood and leave it out in the sun in Thailand at the equator for 6 months, and it develops this incredible raw bleach effect that's become quite popular.
Do you have a lab, like a creative lab, to come and pull these things together? Like, who would have ever thought about electrocuting?
Well, you know what? It is a lab, but probably not the way we would visualize a lab. This is sort of like maybe a shed in a field. But it is a lab by all intents and purposes. So yes, we have both our own in-house team that creates designs. We work with some outside designers, but we also lean on the factories we work with a lot. So we don't own these factories. We partner with them, and they're multi-generational woodworkers or metal workers. And we're constantly, they have learned, whether we tell them or not, that we like interesting, unique, new. So some of them need, we kind of need to twist their arm to push the envelope on what they're doing. But the ones that we've had real success with are constantly serving us up, hey, I electrocuted this piece of wood, what do you think? And we're like, we love it, we'll take 100. Oversimplifying it, but it's a wonderful world we live in where we get to kind of experiment with things almost as if we're fine artists, but we've got this business foundation, this machine, which is Philips Collection, which allows us to purchase the quantities required to bring the price points down, to create efficiencies in production. We know how to pack this stuff. We know how to bring it in. I spoke earlier about unapologetic pieces of nature. So we have a few different categories, fully repeatable furniture, which is obvious. That's what kind of the industry expects, where every coffee table is going to look the same.
Consistent, right.
We have one-of-a-kind pieces where no two pieces are alike. And then we have this wonderful world in the middle that a lot of people don't deal with, which is some-of-a-kind. So coffee tables that are made from slices, cross-sections of a tree trunk. Where each one's going to have different grain character. Some will have cracks and splits, but we're able to offer it as this repeatable item that there are many reasons why that's good. It allows us to offer our clients something that feels a little personalized without having to go all the way to one of a kind. But we have this process here where product comes in, and if there is variance to a certain degree, we photograph every single piece. We put every single piece online. Great technology that backs us up so that when you are shopping for your next coffee table from us, you get the exact one you saw in that photo. And it allows us to go back to our factories, and we're able to say yes to more product from them. We don't reject because there's variance, which helps their business.
Which is really helpful. That's a great point to make. So your products are only available to the trade, which, you know, talk about that relationship between a furniture manufacturer and your designers and the dealers that you work with. What's that like?
Yeah, we sell to, as you said, dealers, so fine furniture stores around the country and world. But our core customer is an interior designer, mainly interior designers working with a consumer, putting it in their home, but also designers for hotels and restaurants and commercial properties. They are able to visit us. You know, how do we acquire a customer? They see us at a trade show. We have showrooms around the country. We go to the hotel shows. But we also have a great web presence and social media, so they can land on our website and set up an account that way. And they get great pricing. So a consumer who could shop us on Wayfair, Perigold, many other e-com sites and get a great price, always going through a designer is going to be the best way for them to access us at a great price. And these designers do us a great service. They tell our story in a way that a product on just a retail shelf can't be told. They also do a lot of damage control. If a product arrives and it's not the right scale, it's not an immediate return. So we lean on these designers and educate them on who we are as a brand and why our product is special and unique. And they're really almost an extension of us. They're almost our salespeople in the field. And we have thousands of these designers buying from us.
That's a really good point. And I think you could make the case that that's one of the benefits of doing to the trade program, right? Like that, yep. You're ambassadors almost. But what are some of the challenges? Is it just about scale that you're not selling to everybody? It's a pretty niche market.
Yes. I think our market penetration has always been a challenge, but an opportunity. There's always this itch we have to go a little mainstream. Whenever a product sneaks into our line that's a bit more pedestrian, it sells like crazy, but we have to preserve our uniqueness in the market. We also find a challenge by not being whole home. It's hard to paint what Philips looks like in your traditional home or your perhaps mountain home on a ski resort lodge. What does it look like in a Miami condo? There's all these different styles that people have. And how do you position your brand And I think leaning on technology and AI and being able to drop our product into different settings to help people realize how they could use it, that's where the designer really comes in and helps us. So I've always described our product as almost the building blocks, the Lego pieces of somebody's project. So we present dimensional wall art, accent furniture, sculpture, all different categories to our customers, but they really use it in a way that they see fit. And it allows our customers to be very creative.
Yes, which you would say your customers are the designers and then their clients are obviously the end user where you're placing it. Are there any tips? Like, I think you talked about it a little bit, that if one of our listeners wants to work with a designer or they want to acquire the piece from the Philips collection, how should they start that? Is there an easy way to do that?
Consumers can go to our website, philipscollection.com, and they can browse and they can go to find a designer, find a dealer. We have a directory. It's quite accessible to be able to start doing business with us. Just do a Google search of Philips Collection. You'll find e-commerce partners you can buy from. But we do always encourage somebody to go through a designer. It both helps with pricing and helps them understand the full breadth of the collection.
That's really helpful. I know I'm going to definitely do that when we get off this call.
No, nice.
Because I've seen your pieces in person, but I've never checked out your website. So let's move a little bit into the trend space and the color space, my favorite topic. So what are some of the trends your team or customers are really embracing right now?
Yeah, I'll start with what the industry's moved away from, which is grays and sharp lines. It's a gift and a curse. We have a lot of gray product in inventory. But I'm a glass half full kind of person, so we've been converting a lot of the gray into other finishes. We can strip the gray finish off of our wood product, and we've gotten to this raw finish. So one of the trends is going lighter. I think people are moving towards softer, richer tones. So in terms of the shape of a product, no hard edges. So we're all designing very smoothed radiuses on our pieces, no sharp edges, pieces that just feel a little more comfortable. And moving away from high gloss, high impact to these richer, deeper hues. So on one end, we're going with bleached wood tones. It's very light and airy, but everything feels light. And then on the other end, it's a richness to finish. So deep browns. Again, we're working a lot with nature as our palette. So it's oftentimes the color of the paint on the wall that allows us to be a little bold and vibrant. So moving away from glossy white, glossy black, gray into, you know, we don't play too much with color in our products, but we have a bit of pastel happening, but really moving into richer finishes is the best way to describe it.
That's awesome that you said that. So our by the time this airs, our color forecast will be out into the universe. And one of the collections that we're talking about is a palette of pastels. And it's sort of this almost like an analogous color scheme. It's blues and greens and purples, like soft lavenders.
Yeah.
And it's very, very, it can look very contemporary. It doesn't look sweet. It can look almost industrial, which I think is really, really interesting.
Yes.
And it's a nice change from white and, you know, kind of black, right? Like I'm done with the high lows. I love that woods and browns. We've been forecasting browns coming back in a big way for a couple seasons, and it's finally really here, which is really good to see.
Yes.
So I think that's interesting, and it's impacting kitchen design. We're starting to see for the first time in probably 6 or 7 years, wood cabinets coming back in, which is, you know, stained cabinets versus just the white kitchen, white on white on white or white on gray. That's a really nice change to see. Again, you're getting this connection. We've talked about nature and the colors of nature coming in, but it's happening now. And you touched on it a little bit, and I'm kind of fascinated with this topic of neuroaesthetics.
Yes.
So that's how the brain connects with design to create a human response that's positive. So like you said, you can track the biorhythms that people feel when they look at a piece of wood furniture and it brings a positive impact. Well, color can do that as well. So I love that intersection in that conversation. And then that's a focus of your business, which, you know, warms my heart. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Versus just trying to put furniture out there that will appeal to everybody.
We have to, so well said on many fronts, and it's obvious that you've been a student of neuroaesthetics, that just the way you rattled that off, you hit the nail on the head. You can use it in two different ways. You know, the way a room makes you feel, you want it to calm you down when it's the bedroom, or when you walk into a home, you're not, you know, you're met with a sense of warmth. But there are some rooms in the house that maybe should be a little bit more upbeat. Maybe the kitchen is a place of entertainment these days. So maybe bolder there, more contrast there. certainly our product going into a trendy restaurant is going to have a certain motif. We have cast rhino heads. These are carved, you know, not
I've seen those.
Not sculpted, you know, these are sculpted. No rhinos harmed. Let me make sure I
explain. Definitely make sure
in
that.
Gold leaf, life-sized. That's not going into a home. That's specifically for high-impact spaces, but we're playing with bleached woods and stone-cast finishes that are very muted, and they're very calming. We have motifs inspired by a trip to Greece we did 5 years ago, Cycladic art, taking just a brow or a nose as the only indication of a face, but somehow it makes this triangle that it's imprinted on us as infants to be able to recognize mom's face. The two eyes and the mouth make a triangle, and you see this showing up in the way the facade of the Notre Dame is done. And it's just so fascinating why our eye is drawn to certain things. And also using 3M has an eye tracking software that people can, you know, you can buy these glasses and it actually tracks where your eye goes, and using that to design our next catalog cover and where is the eye going, and are people paying too much attention to the wall color and not enough to our product? You know, these are important decisions we and other companies need to be leaning on the technology. AI is a big what if in our industry, and we play with it. I'd like to think we're on the forefront of it, but we still don't know copyright, you know, and the legal issues. You know, can it be a design that we call ours if a computer generated it? But it's a great tool towards, and I don't think it's stealing anyone's jobs. It's a great tool to use, whether it's, you know, copywriting tools or visualization tools to just help push our creativity as people.
I agree. 100%.
Yeah, I think it's all human centric. And that's what I love about sustainability. That's what I love about supporting artists and communities. That's what I love about the circularity. When our customers are finished with a product or want to get rid of it, what's that? How do you close that loop? And I think it's intentionality at all aspects. So if using Midjourney helps me come up with my next design and think about what an oversized Cycladic face on the wall looks like in a modern home, within 30 seconds, I have an incredible visualization that can help make my next decision.
Exactly. It's a tool for the design. Though I will say, yeah. Midjourney, I have not cracked the code on Midjourney. It, like, the prompts are too hard. There's others out there that I like a little better, that are a little easier.
Oh, what are you using?
Well, I use ChatGPT. Like, the functionality is very fast. And I use that on my, like, in my personal space. What's the other one I use? Not Perplexity. I use that for research. And I've used Claude. And I get good results. And again, it's just like quick hits. Like, I want to look at that, or I want to think about that. But
yeah,
Midjourney is like the gold standard. I just have to crack the code.
Well, I can, after this call, I can share a little info on it, because I think I've cracked it slightly, and it's so powerful. But it's whatever tools work for you best.
Yes.
So I haven't even played with Claude, and I might even prefer it if I dove into it. So I would just encourage anybody on the fence, or really anybody, should be downloading ChatGPT and playing around with it slightly if
just
you're
play.
Comfortable. Yeah, just play. I mean, I use it. I have a 10-year-old son and a 3-year-old, and I'm using ChatGPT to tell us bedtime stories crafted around what we did that day. And you give it a little bit of prompt, and I've got, first it was giving me 10-minute stories, and I said, make this a little shorter. I'm tired.
Exactly.
Go to bed. Like two paragraphs, and I'm out the door, and I'm a hero. So thank you, ChatGPT.
Thank you, ChatGPT.
But it's just this wonderful thing. I'm like a magician to my kids with it.
It is. It is truly, it's going to be fascinating to see where AI takes us in the design space. And again, I totally agree. Don't be afraid of it. Designers out there, give it a try. See where you can come up with.
It circles back to, okay, ChatGPT, is it taking our voice as people? I don't think so. I think it's making us better. But using technology, let's talk about the good things, like how it could help you design healthier spaces. And then cross-referencing that with the eye tracking software and heart rate monitoring tools. It all started for me. I didn't connect the dot at the time, when I was younger, going to the dentist, and you're in the chair and you're looking up at the skylight. And I feel like they were the first to realize, like, let's put a scene of like the beach up there to calm you down. Like, when are you more nervous than in the dentist chair?
My dentist is Monet.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Right.
But that's why, when you're in a room that feels comfortable, my favorite. So I talked science and design before. My favorite bit of research that I've learned from that is called sanctuary and security. So why do we love to be, as humans, on the second story of a home in a big bay window looking out. Why is that such like a calming place to be? There's actually scientific proof that our caveman brain from 50,000 years ago, we were in caves at elevation. So in a cave behind you is security. There's nothing behind you. But you're looking out at the entire environment and not seeing predators. So as much as we love the idea of a Central Park window overlooking, you know, beautiful Manhattan, there's actually something connecting to your brain that makes you say, I feel safe and secure. So as people, we love to have security behind us and a big view in front of us. When designers and consumers start realizing this, and we're only on the forefront of this, this is going to become common knowledge for people. When a kid's designing their dorm room in 20 years, they're going to already be thinking about things like this. Like, I want calming colors facing the exterior. You know, just think that some designers, I think by accident, just have unlocked these formulas, but now we can put kind of math and science behind those findings.
Do you have resources for that information that you could share, or do you partner with anybody?
ScienceInDesign.com. Mike Peterson has been pioneering this with an architect out of Colorado, Don Ruggles, and we're founding sponsors. And people like Angela Harris of Trio Environments in Denver as well has completely, she runs a gigantic design firm, but has geeked out on this so much that she's gone back to school to get a PhD in neuroscience. So there are a lot of players in this that are getting really excited. Circularity, I'm trying to remember the name of the person I'm working with. It'll come back in a moment. But she is just based in New York City and is just exploring this in such a powerful way. So we have a soapbox at Phillips Collection. This is getting into like where I think the most meaningful things we can do as a company. We can be sustainable ourselves. We can push the envelope ourselves. But if we can inspire other companies to do the same, that's where you really start building momentum. And it's happening. So the ball's already rolling. It's just who's gonna decide this week or this month, I'm going to start diving into this a bit more.
And start learning about it. And just a little bit of information goes a long way. So I encourage listeners, to check this out. So say that again. It's
ScienceInDesign.com.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic.
I plug this all the time because it's super powerful. It will improve lives. There are some quotes that say, interior designers have a greater ability to affect the health of people than doctors do. You go to a doctor when you're already sick sometimes.
That
you
know, is.
If you can have, exactly, like let that sink
true.
In.
Yes.
And it's true. Yeah. I mean, we're not curing cancer as designers, but to design homes that make people live healthier a few percent a day has a profound, it's like compounding interest. It's the same idea. It's like if you're in a healthier room and your heart rate is lower every day and you're a bit calmer and you wake up to natural light and you don't have screens in your face at, you know, 2 hours before bed, all these life hacks actually make a difference before you get to the doctor.
And they do. It's physiological response. So your cortisol isn't flooding your system because of a stressful environment. You're waking up in a space where those levels are really down where they should be. And that will over the long term affect your life. So that is it. That's going to be the pull quote from this episode, I believe.
Well, I don't know how I'm going to not look at my phone the second before I go to bed and the second I wake up. I just take magnesium. That's my hack now.
mine too. I absolutely do. That's
God.
Hysterical.
More power to the people that can put that phone away. I have my phone upside down on my desk and like I keep reaching for it, but look, well, knowing yourself is half the battle, right?
It is. And maybe you're, you know, also listening to good podcasts or creating stories for your kids, right? It's like there's a little intersection of human and technology that's important.
Yeah.
So High Point, unbelievably, is just around the corner. We just wrapped April, but October is a short time away from now. So are you guys doing anything interesting or sneak peeks that you can talk about for fall market?
Yeah, always. Casting boulders. Hopefully not like many other people. But yeah, we've been casting these incredible rock forms. We started with freestanding 8-foot tall forms that landscape architects can use outside properties. We started noticing our customers were using them inside. So instead of a baby grand piano at the bottom of a wraparound staircase, they're putting our sculptures there. Starting to take what we've learned from creating sculptures, that's usually where we start, both floor and wall sculptures, and then turning it into furniture. That's the next step for us. So rock forms as coffee tables, side tables, consoles, mirrors, in finishes you would expect that sort of replicate nature, but also in these pastels that we started talking to.
That's going to be great. Yeah. So will that be at the show? Is that something
that will
I can
be at
check
October
out?
Market. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Great. Very Absolutely. Excited about that. Yeah. Well, you know, your tagline is wonderful. Every piece of conversation. Has that been a legacy tagline or is that something new?
I think it's always been part of our DNA, something that a product that is meaningful just beyond just the way it looks, but a significance beyond it. So every piece of conversation starts leaning into what's the story behind this piece. It's a tagline that was born about 20 years ago in our 40-year history, but has always been our sort of North Star. And we want pieces that are significant, that stop people, that make you think, that every time you come home, you say, that's beautiful, that you learn the story about, and all the stories are on our website, and that you want to tell people about.
That's interesting. And I know I've seen some YouTube videos that you've published. So is all that content on your website that people can check out and, yeah. and kind of learn the story, the story of Philips collection? That's
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And I mean, we have videos on our YouTube page and our website that show how we work with amethyst out of Brazil and go into the mines, and how we are inspired by Cycladic art, as I was talking about before, how we work with wood, and how we collect pieces that would be rejected by other people and turn them into things that are twice exceptional. We love telling stories about the things that inspire us. We've learned over 40 years a few things that we geek out on that the consumer isn't as interested in. Okay, that's sort of redirected how we navigate things. But I think we have a confidence in what we do, a confidence in scale and being different and being unique, but leaning heavily on what do consumers say about our product to help shape the next collection, and leaning heavily on, you know, resources like you. I think Sherwin-Williams, you guys do an excellent job inspiring us, being a compass for us for what's going to come next. So I'm as excited as you are about your 2026 forecast, because it will steer our decisions. We could see a lavender that inspires us to do something with scale or with tree trunks that, you know, you wouldn't even realize is affecting the way we think about things. So
that's exciting. Well, that's great to hear. So something that just sparked my interest. So do you have an example of something that you thought was going to be amazing and it just didn't work? Like, I think that's a fascinating side of design.
All the time. I'm sure I could think of something right now. We were just looking at items that need to be discontinued. Yeah, we've done a lot. I'm just going to off the cuff here. Working a lot with mixing wood with metal. And we use black metal a lot, matte black. And I think things are trending away from that. But we did a collection called Cornered, where it was mainly metal with just a piece of wood sticking out. And we thought it would be a home run, and it wasn't. So not to linger too much on that, but, you know, I think through good marketing, you kind of hide that stuff. but anyone out there that thinks they hit home runs all the time, that's nonsense. So being intelligent about always having fresh new product, leaning a lot on the fact that we have some timeless designs that should never go away, but our customers coming to see us at market want to see new, and then being quick to react to even micro trends in the data. So we're very data heavy. So selling 15 pieces this month of a mirror might not sound a lot to some people, but it might be 200% growth over the month before. And you know, then we start flagging things and designing into the data that we have on this product. It's not as sexy or interesting to a designer, but there's a lot of information that you can glean just from sales and how you forecast for the next collection. I mean, as forecast is really nobody knows that word better than Sherwin-Williams in terms of, you know, confidently anticipating where the market is going to go. We have the luxury of being able to lean on you and all the research you've done. Let's not squander that. So. Right. Sometimes, like the browns, we've been trying to get back. We have beautiful woods from Southeast Asia that are a lighter brown, and we've been staining them to a darker brown. We even called it perfect brown. We thought we had the perfect brown. It was like our version of American walnut. It never got the traction it needed. Do we give up on it? Do we keep trying? I think the answer is the latter, and I'm encouraged by what you were saying, how you see it coming back into the home.
Definitely. Like that mid-tone, almost a hickory, you get a little bit of like that smoky undertone. So there's like a little, it doesn't skew like cherry warmth,
yeah.
you know, like it did 15 years ago. It's a little smokier. It's a little earthier.
Yeah.
Again, maybe a little black undertone in that brown. And I just think that that makes it look, again, it's not espresso, right? We're not talking about espresso floors
right.
like we did in 2004. It's something new, but it's a subtle variation. Talk about black. So where are you seeing black change and shift to in metallics or metals or surface?
We've gotten to flat finishes. That's sort of the best answer I can give to that. The less sheen, the better.
The better.
But maybe that's run its course. So we've gone from semi-gloss to satin to flat. And I think we need to trend back towards satin semi-gloss.
Yeah,
we've never been known to be a glossy type of company, but a deep black that almost, you know, absorbs the light and doesn't have a reflection has been a very high contrast finish for us. So it helps celebrate and ground the other forms that you're communicating with it. So our acacia wood from northern Thailand, we call it golden acacia, just contrasts so nicely with the black. It's a forever finish for us, this flat black. But, you know, we want to be deliberate, maybe even start playing with textures on the black.
Yeah, I can tell you this. There is some interesting things happening in Europe with silver metallics. So we like were in when we were in Italy and we were seeing surface, not like a mercury glass finish. It's not that high shine.
Yeah.
But silver tones, like true silvers are starting to peek back in. So that may be a little bit of a break from kind of the black.
Great
conversation, which is good. I think we're due. It's kind of like at its peak. And so I think we'll start to see it changing.
Oh, we're ready for it, too. I mean, if we have a finish too long in the line, we're ready to try something new despite sales numbers. Sometimes it's very easy in hindsight to say, OK, that collection's run its course. But I'm always impressed by the companies that make pivots mid market to their success. You know, it's not about dropping something. It's about saying, you know what, let's not retire, but let's start migrating in a different direction, even while it's still hot, you know, to push relevance. And
that's a market leader, right? The companies that can do that or the brands that can do that, they're really driving the conversation forward, which is really important. And designers know that instinctively they can plot those patterns and they see who's pushing and changing and evolving. So it's fantastic. Well, this has been an amazing conversation. Super fascinating to me. I hope all our listeners enjoyed. And you've been a great guest. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Yeah, this has been wonderful. Thanks for having me. You know, people can find us PhillipsCollection.com or through our social media. Would love to create dialogue with any listeners that found something valuable.
Yes. And if you're at Fall Market, come see you. Where are you guys at? Where's your showroom?
We have, in the last year and a half, we moved into a new space, street level, at the corner of Commerce and Main.
Okay.
So easy to find us, right on the main pathway.
Easy to find. Well, I'll come see you. I'll be there for sure.
Wonderful.
Well, thanks, Jason.
All right. Thank you so much, Sue.
As always, we'd like to take a moment to congratulate our August Designer of the Month, Charlotte's own Stephanie Calderon. Her exceptional work has been celebrated in Architectural Digest, Better Homes and Gardens, and Charlotte Magazine. And we invite you to help us congratulate her on social media at SW Design Pros and find out more at StephanieCalderonInteriors.com. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review, and tell other design and color lovers about our show. See you next time on Color Mixology.